Welcome to Your Path to Nonprofit Leadership, the podcast that equips you with the insights and strategies to thrive in your nonprofit leadership role. I'm your host, Pat McDowell, and excited to embark with you on another conversation with a nonprofit expert who is making a difference in our sector. Now, this episode is brought to you by PMA's Mastermind Leadership Development Program, now accepting applications for the 2024 summer and fall cohorts. If you're ready to elevate your leadership skills and connect with a national community of nearly 150 fellow nonprofit leaders, now's the time. You can join our Mastermind program by going to our website, pmanonprofit.com. Go to the Mastermind page, and you can lock in on our 2023 prices. But you got to hustle, as these prices go up tomorrow. That's right, March 15, 2024, the day after this episode is released, we will move into 2024 pricing. Lock in now. Go to pmanonprofit.com/mastermind, and you can be part of our leadership cohort. Now, we've got another fantastic conversation to share with you today. I was visited by Whitney Martinez. This is episode number 253, and she is the founder and CEO of Absolute Impact Consulting. Now, Whitney is literally an expert in capacity building and strategic leadership in our sector, and she's here to share some wisdom with you, including defining exactly what does it mean to focus on capacity building. How do we foster strategic collaboration? And Whitney's got answers to both of those questions and much more, relying on her work with nonprofits of all sizes. You're going to get a lot out of this. Listen carefully, and don't forget to check out the show notes. Just go to the podcast page at pmanonprofit.com. Go to episode number 253, and you can learn a lot more about what Whitney and I discuss. Without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Whitney Martinez. Whitney, thank you for joining me on the path.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat, and I'm so excited to be here. This is really cool.
I'm excited to continue some conversations we have had over the last few years. You are a wonderful resource for me to talk to and for our listeners to benefit from. And you're talking about something that is tossed around a lot in terms of a phrase, you know, we need to build capacity as nonprofit leaders. And I think that makes sense in general. We're doing good work. We want to do more of it. We want to have greater impact. But it's a struggle, I think. And you and I have seen colleagues that are challenged by this. Why do you think many of our nonprofit leader friends are challenged when they try to build capacity?
You know what, Pat, that's a fantastic question. And I really think it's because many of us don't truly know what building capacity truly is. You know, when we throw out we throw it around so many times. And oftentimes our mind goes to building capacity financially, raising more money, more funds, right, more programs, or more impact, more, when in fact capacity could really technically mean scaling back, going deeper, becoming more focused, realigning our priorities. There are so many different ways, you know, upskilling our team members, so many different ways to build capacity. And I can't wait to dive into that.
Yeah, we definitely will. And you're right. I think the headline for many is capacity translates to financial or fundraising support, right? And you're suggesting that it impacts every aspect of the organization. And that's what you have really helped many organizations that are leaders do just that. That's right. Before we unpack, though, let's talk about your journey. How did you get into the nonprofit sector in the first place?
Wow. So, you know, this goes back way to, oh my gosh, I want to say 2004, 2005 on my college campus. I attended FIU in Miami, and my sorority did a breast cancer walk.
Right.
And of all of the aspects of planning that breast cancer walk, from the t-shirt designs, you know, the programming piece, mapping out the trail, raising money was the part that really interested me the most.
Wow.
You know, going to different campus groups and trying to get them to quote unquote sponsor, which is not the word we used at the time. It was just a, you know, regular donation.
Right.
To do this breast cancer walk. But I remember just being really turned on by that aspect of, wow, there are people out there who would actually want to support something that we want to do that can benefit the community. And, you know, it didn't dawn on me at that time that this was going to be my career path. I mean, at the time, I still wanted to and I was actually pursuing a pre-pharmacy major. I wanted to go to pharmaceutical sciences.
Right.
But I got to tell you, Patton, I failed physics one three times.
That was a signal, maybe,
just
right?
It wasn't happening.
Right.
It just wasn't happening at that point. But that's where my interest peaked, for nonprofit. Didn't pursue it right away after college. But I did know from that moment that whatever career path I did choose, I wanted to be in a space where I could actually help people. I wanted to be in a space where I felt like, although I was grinding day in and day out, that I could give back to through whatever work that I was actually doing. And so after graduating from undergrad, my first actual job was working as a scheduling coordinator for full-time job anyway, working as a scheduling coordinator for a children's theater company. And again, was not registering it as let me give back to the community through that. I mentioned earlier, I was a health science major, pre-pharmacy, but I also double majored in theater. And so my interest was kind of left brain, right brain at the time. I couldn't choose. Graduated, went on to working for this theater company. And that is where my nonprofit career actually started. I started editing grants, a paragraph here and there,
right?
Editing budgets for, different applications. I wasn't meeting with funders or anything. I didn't understand that concept at that time. It was just about, let me edit, these applications. It was very surface, very minimal based work. And as I got deeper into my career, one thing led to another. As they say, I went from working for, that theater company to a couple of education nonprofits, Gable Stage, a really amazing theater company in Miami for a few years. And then, Patton, there was something that really turned for me, at that time. I realized, although my, passion fell within the arts, it was really about what the arts could do for community. And then here again, I found myself thinking through what a career in service could look like for me, and started pursuing and working in the education space, as a teacher. And I kind of went back and forth a little bit between.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. In the nonprofit space, I couldn't find a way to marry the two.
Right.
That felt true for me. And so after a few years of, several years, of kind of going back and forth and trying to figure it out, teaching, nonprofit space, grant writing, fundraising. I made the decision after in 2015, when I moved here in Charlotte, I was hired to teach theater at a Title I school. And I did that, and a little more than halfway through the school year, the principal notified me that they were getting rid of the drama program due to budget cuts.
At that point,
I made the decision that I was going to go back into the nonprofit space, but very specifically arts and culture, to help fundraise so that other students didn't have to experience a lack of artistic resources like my kids did at that school. And the rest is history.
Love it. And mm-hmm. and of course, love the mission focus, which I knew was evident from the first time I spoke to you. And also the fact that fundraising didn't kind of, it scares many of us away, frankly, in the nonprofit sector. Yeah. And so for you, there was an appeal. And of course, that's translated, I know, to the work you do now. So talk about Absolute Impact Consulting, the practice you've started, and what is your focus as you help organizations through that consulting firm?
Sure. So we're a fairly young company, Patton. We launched in 2022. When I launched Absolute Impact Consulting, because I saw a need in the sector for two primary things. One, to make resources available to nonprofit organizations that typically don't have enough resources for capacity building. And by that, I mean the knowledge of capacity building, the education and the training that's required for team members at all levels in order to be most effective within their own positions. And looking at this dynamic of how teams work together, because you have so many different levels within the nonprofit space or within an organization of what the needs are, within that organization, what the priorities are. And when you're thinking about and working with smaller to medium sized organizations, those needs are many, but the I'll use the word capacity, the word, you know,
Yeah,
the
literally.
capacity. Yeah,
Yep.
literally, the capacity to fulfill those needs are so few. So my impetus was, you know, how, what can I build within Absolute Impact Consulting, you know, that can really help organizations? What does my company need to look like to really fulfill this gap of helping organizations, meeting them where they are in order to maximize their impact? And
Yeah, that.
so, yeah. And so through that, we've then, you know, devised the three divisions through Absolute Impact, which is working directly with nonprofits. Secondly, we also work with funders to help provide capacity building resources for their grantees. And thirdly, we provide the education and the wherewithal for organizations and professional development for them to be able to continue this work on their own. So those are the three sectors we work in, and we work across six different domains of fundraising, marketing, operational alignment, talent, people, culture, and board training and governance and strategic planning.
Love it. I remember as you were formulating your structure and the design that is now manifesting itself in direct support and in fact often in the building capacity space. Of course, I love the fact too that you're modeling the professional and career development that you yourself have done as well as what you kind of encourage those that you work with. And you were a wonderful participant of our mastermind program. I wonder in the spirit of professional and leadership development, what did you take away from that experience?
Oh my. So for me, mastermind was really about creating space for yourself
Yep.
as a leader. You know, oftentimes we're asked to create space for others. We're asked to, you know, help others with their own agendas. We're asked to think about the things that we need to do as leaders or how we need to perform. But mastermind really created the space to do that and created the space to do that with other professionals. So you almost, you know, for me, it was almost like getting one-on-one coaching from you, Patton, you know, as a leader, but also being in the space with other professionals who are going through those same struggles in an intimate setting. And that was one of the things I really appreciated about Mastermind is that, you know, it provided an intimate setting. You know, we're Mastermind is not about creating a cohort of 25, you know, individuals for an
Right,
online
right.
class. You all capping it at eight individuals, you know, really helped me personally to build relationships I wouldn't have built, you know, across the sector for various different reasons. So it really forced me to create the space to think about and execute what I needed at that time. Many of those things we continue to need, right? Because what I remember
Yes.
about Mastermind is it is a pathway. I mean, you literally had a pathway on one of those introductory documents. Because
Right.
leadership is a journey. You're never going to master all of these things, right? Truly, but how can we continue the journey? And better yet, how can we continue with the people within our cohort and keep those connections and networks open and create space for that?
I appreciate it. And you were a wonderful participant. And you're right. The journey of the best leaders, I think, never ends. You don't arrive, right? You just continue to strengthen your skills and experiences so that you can, in turn, impact the organizations that you're working for. And you have continued to do just that. Again, capacity building is our headline today, Whitney, for this conversation. Let's go back to something you said. That I think capacity building is often defined maybe too broadly around the finances and fundraising. But what again is your definition of capacity building for a nonprofit organization?
For me, capacity building is about prioritizing depth or growth. And, you know, that could be expanded in so many different ways. But I've worked with so many organizations, Patton, at this point, that those two are the ones that typically rise to the top. It's about depth or it's about growth. And even in more simpler terms, in terms of how, you know, Absolute Impact operationalizes capacity building, and you might have heard this before, it's really teaching someone how to fish,
Yeah, good
right?
point.
It's, yeah, it's teaching someone how to fish because, you know, if you can't eventually do it on your own as a team member or a leader or an organization, then you're always going to need that crutch of somebody coming in, you know, to do it for you. And if that crutch is always there, it becomes so much more difficult to build sustainability as an organization. And you might have seen this too, Patton, across the sector, I'm sure. You know, when we're talking about grassroots and BIPOC-led organizations, oftentimes the ones who need the most help and resources and capacity building resources more specifically, you know, again, staff is limited, budget is limited, but our hearts are in the right place. Programs might be doing great. We want to expand, but sometimes capacity building, it's really about pulling back. We may have to stop doing that program.
Yeah, interesting.
In order to really build a more sustainable future for this organization, we may, you know, have to talk to some board members about effectively leaving the board or shortening their terms, because we need to build a board that is reflective of our community and or a board that is reflective of the lived experiences of the communities that we're serving. And maybe it's growing the board, right? Or maybe it's taking the board that we have, and I'm speaking from a leadership standpoint at the board level here, taking the board that we have and making sure that they at least understand some of the lived experiences of the our target audience and those that we're serving. Because there's an educational curve and component there, or a learning curve there as well. I think that is important. We want to upskill our staff. It's also important to upskill your board.
Yeah,
it's not glad. Just about the board retreat, right?
Right, right.
Well, I'm and glad the financial you mentioned, planning.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned both sides of that equation, because I think that's, because I wonder too, Whitney, do you run into a lot of leaders, especially small organizations, that mm-hmm. are like, yeah, Whitney, I know, you know, capacity building is important, but I just need to raise more money. So let's cut to the chase there. But I guess you're telling them that actually the organization is going to benefit in more ways than just more revenue generation.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, although revenue generation, you know, I always say it touches, of course, every part of the organization. And one of the key pieces of advice I typically give organizations, and no matter at what level, whether if you're grassroots or you have a staff of 62, which was a case for one of our clients in 2023, is, do you really need more money, or do you need to more effectively manage the money that you have?
Yeah.
You know, and we can apply this to almost every facet of life, right? Even with our own personal finances.
True.
Or cluttered closets. Do you need more closet space or, you know, storage from IKEA? Or do you just need to get rid of some stuff?
Clean right? it up. Yes.
And so how do we clean out that closet and make more room for what really matters? And I love that analogy, because we all have that messy closet or that messy drawer, and we can all relate to it. And what I've seen is that, well, I'll rephrase that and say, I haven't seen or met an organization that doesn't have some loose baggage that it could actually get rid of.
Interesting. And so it's not about just immediate growth or expansion. It's first maybe evaluating where you are now. And I guess it leads to the question, especially a small nonprofit, a leader in that setting, and you've worked with all sizes of organization, but where do you often advise them to start? And it sounds like part of it is, let's evaluate what you're doing before you jump ahead to growth. But is there anything, a listener right now thinking, all right, Whitney, I hear you, but I don't know where to start?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do what we call, we have different types of audits. You know, we think audit, we think financial. So our firm actually does a development audit. We also do marketing audits, operation audits. And that really, depending on the audit that you need or the domain that we're helping your nonprofit with, you know, we really try to figure out what you have, what you don't have, what you need, and then what you need to get there. And that's what the audit really answers. You know, what you need to get rid of, you know, do you have folks to actually carry this work and see it through to a level of effectiveness that is excellent? You know, we're not aiming for perfection here, but there is a difference, right, between, you know, doing some mediocre work across six programs, hoping to get, you know, a few thousand dollars here and there to execute them, versus saying, you know what, we're going to focus on two programs. And over the next 3 years, we're going to take this program from level A to level Z. And here's what we need to do it. Here's who we need to do it. And here's how much we're going to need to do it. And being just very intentional about what that impact and what success needs to look like once those programs are executed. And so the audits that, you know, we provide, And we do our best to make them non-threatening, but we also don't hold the truth back, you know, of course, from the work and from our clients. And, you know, we try to make it so that it's very objective, so that folks are not clinging on to things because they've been doing it because of historical knowledge. Even things like your mission statement and your vision statement, does that need to change? You know, are you operating off of a 45-year mission statement that no longer serves your target audience? And do you even know who your target audience is?
Right. are we just doing things because we've always done them that way, right?
That's
and I guess
right.
you're holding
That's
the mirror up to that and suggesting
absolutely.
Maybe it's time to change.
That's exactly right, Patton. And, you know, again, I think, and I'll hate, you know, to go back to kind of the question you asked about Mastermind and my response in terms of that program really creating space to take the time to really think through these things, you know, in an intimate and confidential group setting, it's almost as if, not almost as if, I think this is what it is. And you've probably experienced this too. You know, as organizations, again, particularly small to medium size, we're not taking enough time to think through these things. And I'm not talking about strategic planning even. This is almost the precursor to strategic planning, right? This is the foreshadow of strategic planning before we even get to putting numbers down and outcomes. The question is, what are we doing here and why?
Exactly right.
Right?
But you're not seeing that question being asked. Is that your point? That
well,
often
you know
they haven't stopped long enough to do so?
They haven't stopped long enough to do so because many nonprofits, and many do know what they're doing, right? And they're killing that mission. But many also are just sort of on that hamster wheel, just doing the same programs year after year. It's not yielding any ROI. You know, I've been with organizations who have hired a team member to take care of a program that is not yielding any ROI. And this is not only ROI in terms of dollars, we're talking about community impact ROI. And so let's stop and think about what are we doing? Why are we doing it? And then get on the same page about what it is that we really need to do. Patton, I've done I know you do a lot of board training as well, Patton. I've done an exercise in a board training sessions where every board member takes 3 minutes personally on their own with a sheet of paper to write down, and we've done this many ways. It could be the mission of the organization stated differently than what it currently says on the website.
Right.
But the one that I really love is name the top three priorities of this organization. I have had groups of 8 board members, 19 different priorities. Right?
No two of them are alike, right?
No is two that, of them are alike.
Right.
And that is the most simple exercise I've done with teams and board members, but it's also the most eye-opening everyone to say, oh, whoa, we do need to create that theory of change, or we do need to start talking about what a strategy looks like or a sustainability plan. Something is off. You've come up with the answers. We're just guiding you towards, you know,
right.
We're just giving you the clarity of what we're trying to say. Because it's one thing for me to come in and say, well, we need to fix this, you know, capacity. You guys need to build more capacity in this area, that area. We need to build more alignment. Because in that exercise, what we realize is we don't have any priorities. And if your priorities are not aligned, it's really hard to build capacity if you don't know what you're building capacity towards. Right. Even if it's capacity for fundraising. Well, we don't
so
know what
true.
We're really fundraising for. And we don't know because we don't know our priorities. And we don't know our priorities, which means we don't have a strategic plan that is true and aligned with what our needs are, you know, in this current moment. So it all ties in together, Patton. It all
yeah,
ties
it.
In together.
Love that exercise. And you're right. It's an aha moment because I bet in many cases you run into almost a defensiveness like, yeah, we don't need to do that. We all are on the same page. And
absolutely.
Then that exercise confirms that
right.
actually you are not.
That's and right.
So,
that's right.
And just I think that is a wonderful
yeah.
idea for our listeners to consider creating a space for that kind of 3-minute exercise. And then mm-hmm. what does it tell mm-hmm. you? I want to harken back to something you said earlier in terms of cultural challenges you run into.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned one that I've seen as well. It's you know, the toxic board member, maybe,
mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
maybe it's lack of leadership support of some of the things you're describing. But are there examples, Whitney, that you've seen that kind of hinder an organization who otherwise wants to build capacity?
Yeah, I think, you know, definitely both of the things that you just mentioned. There's so many. You know, I've been with organizations who have a board member who was also a founder, and they've been on the board for 26 years.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And it's one of those things where, okay, how do we clean up a little bit here, still value that person's insight in a different capacity, for lack of a better term, but it's fitting for this episode. How do we value that person's insight? But we have to break free from, right, those kind of historical roots of this is how we've always done it. And the fear of we don't want to hurt our founders' feelings, right? They're still on the board. We have to break free from that. And I think the other piece is even more important when you're talking about internal leadership within an organization. And for me, you know, the cultures that I've seen, of course, there are nonprofits with amazing cultures, right? Folks they're on the same page. You know, it shows through their impact and it shows through how they're fulfilling their mission each and every day. Donors feel it because, you know, they're being stewarded. New donors are being cultivated and pulled into that funnel. It's not perfect, but you can tell there's a synergy there and everyone is singing off the same page of the hymn book.
Yeah.
And then we have, you know, that kind of other extreme of, you know, toxic leadership, you know, who doesn't believe in spending extra dollars on professional development and that folks should take care of that on their own. Or this is one of my favorites, but one of the worst. When you're talking about an executive director or CEO of a nonprofit who doesn't feel the need to be involved in fundraising because they've hired a director of development or
yes,
a head of
indeed.
Development.
Right.
And that one is a prominent one. It's a scary one. And it is one that impacts the entire organization. Yeah.
Multiple good examples. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation myself with someone who was struggling with the founder syndrome kind of environment, which is tough because you do, as you noted beautifully, you want to honor that person who brought the organization to life, but perhaps they are now not the right person in the leadership role. And then, of course, the toxic board member and all of those things. And that's what, again, I'm glad you're raising them. I know our listeners are nodding their head at like, oh, yeah, I've seen that, or hopefully not experiencing it as much now. Let me ask you about something else in terms of the importance of community collaboration. You know, what kind of emphasis do you put on that when you're working with an organization who could say, well, Whitney, I got my hands full just keeping my organization in motion. So how much emphasis should I put on collaborating with others in our community?
I'm a strong believer in collaboration, Patton. My only really strategic advice for organizations would be to make sure that it's really well thought through. You know, we're not going museum to museum here and saying, hey, let's do something in the next 3 to 6 months.
Right.
It's thought through. Make sure it's multi-year. Make sure the idea is fundable as well. Because, you know, we can spend a lot of time and energy thinking something is a great collaboration. But if it's not fundable, if it's not returning an ROI, you know, for both organizations, if it's putting more strain than gain, then it is something that probably shouldn't happen.
I like the way you put that, because you're right. It's easy to get in that trap of collaboration is good, so we should just do it in every instance. But no, we shouldn't. And so being thoughtful, as you suggest, and maybe prioritizing where collaboration makes the most sense for those you serve, because otherwise I see examples where you're just spread too thin, right? And that's what you're counseling against.
Yeah. Well, in relation to that too, Patton, you know, one of the things that's worked really well I've seen for organizations is when you're collaborating, you know, we typically think about collaborating with others that are like us or other organizations who are different from us and can bring something to the table.
Complementary.
You know, yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, if you are complementary, great. Still, you know, keeping ROI, whether that's audience growth, financial, whatever that ROI is for you and your collaborator, but also keeping in mind and uplifting how DEI plays a role in this as well, right? Because if you are an organization that is seeking to, let's say, diversify your funding stream, or you're looking to build an advisory board that is representative of the community that you serve. Well, those collaborations are going to look a lot different. And it's important to ensure that the voices of those that you're serving are part of those collaborations. And it's not performative, right? You are focusing your collaborative efforts on DEI strategies, or you're focusing your fundraising on expanding and diversifying your donor stream. And by diversifying, of course, I mean, maybe you need more BIPOC-like businesses supporting your nonprofit, not necessarily the revenue stream itself, but who is supporting this organization. But thinking through those things very, very strategically and making sure that community voice and that those folks that you are looking to collaborate with are a part of the process from beginning to end, and that your organization is not doing it in a silo and then inviting somebody else in, because then it can become very performative.
Right.
And we want to, you know, we really want to dispel things around in that style.
Love it. We're moving to the finish line here, Whitney, but I got a couple more questions
already?
I want to make sure we get to. Yeah, time flies. Time flies when you're having a good conversation, doesn't it? Tell me about some of the trends you're seeing, or maybe an example of innovation as you work with organizations. Many of them you and I both see are kind of stuck, I think, in many respects. But are you seeing some examples of kind of innovation or new ideas?
You know what, Patton? So let me tell you what I've seen and what I think might be, you know, related to that. There has been such a shift, and you know this, I'm preaching to the choir here, but there has been such a shift, you know, and I'm sure many of our listeners have seen this in the philanthropic landscape, right? There's been this shift, of course, from 2020 of, yes, let's support Black and BIPOC-led organizations, right, since 2020. There has been a dip in that shift, right?
Yep.
Higher ed institutions are getting rid of DEI departments. Corporations are getting rid of DEI departments. Budgets are being cut. The emphasis is no longer solely on DEIB. And so for me, you know, taking sort of that momentum that was happening and nonprofits taking all of that data and really figuring out what needs to shift for them is going to be key. Because I have to be honest, I think that the innovation is coming. I don't think we're there yet as a sector.
Right.
I think there are a couple of, you know, disconnects that we'll need to work through. You know, when we think about this notion of, you know, trust-based philanthropy, which is such a key component of helping nonprofits build capacity, right? With unrestricted funding and really helping organizations get to that next level or to sustain what they are doing. When we think about trust-based philanthropy, you know, then I think we're starting to think about innovation, but I don't think as a sector we're there yet, because corporations are moving at a different rate and in many cases in a different direction than the philanthropy landscape is, which is, you know, more a need for more trust-based philanthropy, a need for more unrestricted diversity in funding. But I don't, there needs to be a merging of the two sectors, the public and private sector, for us to really start seeing some gain in innovation in this space. I don't think we're there yet, but I am holding on to hope that we will.
Well put.
Some change soon.
Well put. And like everything else you've shared, Whitney, lots of good takeaways. And again, I am glad you're out there helping organizations do that hard work, you know, that you just described that needs to happen. And hopefully our corporate friends and others that support the philanthropic sector will do just that. Whitney, final advice for our listeners, you know, as they ponder capacity building, what do you want them to take away from our conversation?
You know what, Patton? I mean, I have a list, but I think my biggest takeaway here would be, don't be afraid to stop. And what I mean by that is, so, you know, it's hard for us as a sector, and this is across size of not of organizations, to just stop, think, strategize before we make our next move.
Yep.
You know, small to medium sized organizations, we are running 100 miles an hour. Sometimes we just have to stop. Now, whether if you're stopping for a week, a month, or a quarter to really strategize on what it is that your next steps need to be to build sustainability for your organization. Because look, if we can't define what success looks like by the end of this year, year two, year three, and put some really measurable goals towards that and really define what the ROI needs to look like, then you're going to be in a lot more trouble than probably you are now. And we don't want that, right? We want to be in a place where team members, leadership, board members, stakeholders are all around the table on the same page about what your organization does. It's going to help you raise more money. It'll help you retain your staff. It'll boost your reputation, given you have a healthy culture, internal culture. But all of those things really rely on a clear, succinct vision and strategy and everybody being on the same page. So don't be afraid to stop to put those pieces in place.
So well put. It's great advice. And I think there's a collective sigh of relief, frankly, for many listeners, Whitney, who I think by their very nature are just, they put their heads down and they just go, go, go.
That's right.
Right. And that's what, again, I guess you're counseling them. Hey, it's okay to stop and be strategic and be thoughtful about what you're doing. And that is yet another wonderful takeaway.
Give yourself the space to do it. Absolutely.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, one parting gift, if I might request. You and I have shared many good books between the two of us, so I knew you would enjoy this question. Whitney, is there one book, which maybe is a hard question, right? But is there one book you might recommend to our listeners that has been meaningful to you on your journey?
Absolutely. Mindset by Carol Dweck is one of my favorite books of all time. And Pat and I, I'm sorry to say, but it was one of my favorites before you gave me the book. And
a few years ago, during
my mastermind journey, because mindset is everything. Mindset is everything. You know, whether if you have a $100,000 budget or you're working towards a $1 million budget for the first time, or you're at $50 million, your mindset, and really for the nonprofit sector, I would say, you know, really focusing on having that abundance mindset, right, is going to be key to get to that next level, whatever that next level is for you and however it feels true to you. But Mindset by Carol Dweck, lots of good knowledge. And it's one of those you're going to have to read two or three times.
I couldn't agree more. You knew I was going to love that recommendation.
That's right.
So thank you. And it's exactly why it's the first book I send each participant of our mastermind program is literally that one. So thanks for lifting it up again. All right, Whitney, where can our listeners find out more about you and the great work you're doing?
Find out more about us at theabsoluteimpact.com. That is our official company website. There's information about me on there, information about the work that we do with nonprofits, funders, and what we do within the education space as well through professional development. So really excited to connect with folks who are listening. I hope you all reach out.
Indeed, they will. We will link it all up in the show notes. So I'm going to encourage our listeners to check it out and learn more about Whitney and the work she's doing through Absolute Impact Consulting. And Whitney, one more time, thank you for joining me on the path.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat. And this was great.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Whitney as much as I did, and you came away with some practical ideas, especially as it relates to building capacity at your nonprofit. Whitney is the perfect one to listen to and learn more about if you're trying to take your nonprofit to the next level. Now, for more information about this episode and all of the resources and topics Whitney and I discussed, go to the podcast page at pmanonprofit.com, and you can check out the show notes and get linked to Whitney herself, her consulting practice, and other resources, including our book recommendation. Thank you, as always, for listening to this podcast. And if you found this episode enlightening, please do me a favor. Share it with one other person who's also on the path to nonprofit leadership. They can benefit like you did from Whitney's expertise. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. That way you won't miss out on any of our weekly episodes. They come out every Thursday. Once again, pmanonprofit.com. Go to the podcast page, click on the follow button, and you won't miss out. Thanks once again for all you're doing in the nonprofit sector, especially right now, and keep up the good work for causes that are most meaningful to you. I'll keep bringing you content to help you do it even better. Have a great week. I'll see you next time on The Path.